to the world's eighth continent, right underneath us. Te Rua a Maui, or Zealandia, is the world's youngest, smallest, thinnest and most submerged continent, with about 94% of it lying underwater. Geologist with GNS Science, Dr. Nick Mortimer, has been at the forefront of discoveries about the hidden continent. He's recently been awarded a $100,000 James Cook Research Fellowship from Royal Society Te Aparangi to continue his work on Zealandia's geological makeup and ancestry. He was elected a fellow, as we said, of the Royal Society in 2017, and in 2020 received a Science New Zealand Individual Lifetime Achievement Award. Dr. Mortimer says it's taken hundreds of years for the science behind the discovery of the continent to mature, and there's still much to explain and to communicate about it. I asked him to describe Te Rua a Maui.
Te Rua a Maui, Zealandia, is simply Earth's eighth continent. It's 95% submerged and out of sight. It's 5 million square kilometres in the Southwest Pacific. But myself and my colleagues have put it on the map, and it's here to stay. Now, a lot of you listeners might not think that we've got a continent down in this part of the world. If you go to a dictionary, the definition of most continents is described as one of the world's large, continuous landmasses. We geologists don't restrict our definition of continents to just the land. We include the submerged continental shelves that form fringes around all the world's landmasses. So to define a continent, we geologists want to see some high elevation, thick crust, diverse geology. They have to be big, and they also have to be old. And over the decades, we've accumulated enough evidence that we can tick all of those five boxes for Zealandia, which is why we now say that there's the continent of Te Rua Maui, Zealandia, around New Zealand and New Caledonia.
What's so exciting, and I'm sure it is for you and your colleagues, is that establishing this is just so recent. We like to think there's nothing new under the sun. Interestingly, perhaps the things that we know least now are what is underwater, and this continent very much is, 94% of it.
Well, that's right. I mean, the rocks themselves have not changed, and they've always been there. But it's our approach to it and our understanding of why they're there and what they mean that has changed a lot in the last 20 years.
How and when did it form?
Well, Zealandia has got a very interesting whakapapa. Many of your listeners will have heard of the supercontinent of Gondwana. And Zealandia was formerly one of the constituent continents of that supercontinent. So along with Australia, Antarctica, South America and Africa, for many hundreds of millions of years, we formed a southern hemisphere supercontinent. But the family history goes back even further than that. We can go back further in geological time to the Pangaea supercontinent, and then to even in the mists of time into early Earth continents like Rodinia and the like. But I mean, Zealandia really only broke off Gondwana and became its own continent between 85 and 60 million years ago, which geologically is fairly recent.
It makes it the youngest of the eight continents, yeah?
It does, yeah. So there's a number of superlatives you can pin on Zealandia. Youngest is one, most recently discovered, most submerged, smallest, a number of things.
Let's talk about the very recent journey, which is establishing its existence, and we'll come to your role in it. But when did geologists and scientists first begin to believe there was a submerged continent here?
Well, first of all, it's important to remember that the Polynesians were the first to find the islands of Aotearoa, New Zealand, and they were the first to engage in exploration and discoveries across the entire Pacific Ocean. The story of Cook's voyages is fairly well known. Cook, of course, was not a geologist. The scientific story of Zealandia really begins in the 19th century. with the geologists coming here, and they recognized that they were finding rocks in New Zealand that were usually found on continents. So, I mean, both early Maori and the European colonists identified that the two islands of New Zealand were much larger and higher and much more diverse in terms of flora, fauna, geology than the Pacific Islands in the Pacific Ocean basin that they were used to.
Much of the,
So,
oh, I beg your
yeah.
pardon, I was going to say, much of the story has been about establishing, I guess, in scientific or geological terms. And when was the New Zealand Plateau first recognised?
Yeah, just a few days ago, I looked up a paper by one of my predecessors at the Geological Survey, James Hector. This was an 1895 paper, and he'd been on a voyage on the Hinamoa around New Zealand's subantarctic islands, so to the Chathams, Antipodes, Bounty, Campbell, and Auckland Islands. And at the end of that little paper, it's just a two-page paper in the Proceedings of the Royal Society of New Zealand. He used the word continental to describe this submerged landmass that he believed lay at depths of 2,000 feet below the sea level. And so from that time, and from Hector's time, and all the way through the 20th century, a lot of geologists and geophysicists who studied this part of the world used the adjective continental to describe the rocks and the crust and the features that they were seeing around here. But it was only really in the 1990s that we started using the noun continent.
It was in 95, I think, it was a US marine geophysicist who first dubbed the term Zealandia, but it wasn't seen as a central part of the work he was doing. It was kind of a reference.
That's right. You're talking about Bruce Lyon-Dyke, who's a familiar colleague to us New Zealanders. Bruce used the term Zealandia in a fairly casual way in a paper describing the breakup and tectonics of Antarctica. So he used it. He just drew it in a diagram. He didn't define it or outline its edges in the way that we've done since then. But yeah, Bruce does deserve the credit for the name and the initial concept. And it's really only in the succeeding years, the early 2000s, that research in New Zealand got underway, and we started to focus on the underwater continent and to build up the data sets to the state we've got them.
So we started getting GNS science papers being delivered, starting to describe boundaries in geology. Then 2014, your own and Hamish Campbell's book, Zealandia, Our Continent Revealed, is published. At what stage were you at then, Nick, not only in being able to describe, establish and describe Zealandia as a continent, but to get recognition by peers of what you were arguing? Was that still a way off even then?
Well, as I said earlier, the rocks haven't changed. So the way we used to describe and understand the Southwest Pacific, prior to 1995, prior to 2014, they're still okay constructs to use. But we just think that saying up front foot again and saying we have Zealandia, a noun, a continent here, is a much more accurate and informative way to communicate to geoscientists and to other people what's here. So a lot of the investigations have actually been at sea. This is unsurprising given that 94, 95% of Zealandia is submerged. And I think, yeah, some of the most inspiring research I've done has been the marine geological expeditions I've been on.
What has been uncovered through those that helped build up to this point in 2017 where there was kind of an acceptance, or it caught the imagination of the world, really, because, nearly a billion people ended up reading about this new, in inverted commas, new continent then. So tell me more about what you were learning on the way, including those marine trips.
I'll recount to you a story from one of the voyages I did on a German ship, the Zonner, in late 2002. So this was some colleagues from the Geomar Research Institute in Kiel, Germany. They'd obtained research funding to work on some basalts around New Zealand. Now, the basalts are rocks that are distinctive of the oceanic crust of the Earth, not the continental crust. I was invited on the cruise as a participant, and so we set off. And we're mainly sampling seabed rocks by rock dredging in a basket from east of the North Island. And this is a 5 week long cruise, and we were dredging rocks and sampling and basalt for many weeks. Anyway, we eventually found our way to 600 kilometers east of the Chatham Islands. Remember, the Chatham Islands are 900 kilometers east of Christchurch, so we were a long way from New Zealand, right at the tip of what we knew was the Chatham Rise. So one day we made this dredge, dredge 43 it was, I remember, on a seamount on the very tip of the Chatham Rise, and instead of getting basalt, we dredged the granite. And for me, this is a real eureka moment in the story of Zealandia, because granites are distinctive rocks of the continents, of the Earth's continents, not of the Earth's oceans. So we made a lot of that rock. We pulled it apart and analyzed it and dated it in the way that we geologists did. And it also was very important at the time for the New Zealand Extended Continental Shelf submission to the United Nations. Back in the early 2000s, Land Information New Zealand, NIWA, and GNS formed a team to put the case for a submission to United Nations technical body to extend our submarine territory. Most of your listeners will probably know that we have a 200 nautical mile exclusive economic zone around our coasts. Well, since the 1990s, this United Nations body has offered an opportunity for us to extend our territorial rights beyond that. And to do this, we need to demonstrate that there is either a bathymetric reason or a geological reason to extend it. And the finding of continental rocks, this granite, right at the extreme eastern tip of the Chatham Rise, was very important in that picture. In fact, a sample of the rock actually went to the United Nations in New York as part of the New Zealand submission to the UN. So it was very important at the time for that, and that and other rock samples from around New Zealand have helped convince, first of all, us at GNS Science and within New Zealand, but also colleagues around the world that we really have something, tangible and empirically based, and it's not fanciful at all. It's not like Atlantis. It's good solid science, and we've got the higher evidence to show that we have the continent.
What will happen? What will you be researching with the James Cook Research Fellowship funding that you've been granted? This is $100,000 from the Royal Society Te Aparangi. And what will this enable you to do?
The main thing it'll let me do is to take stock of all the scientific advances and research on Zealandia that have happened since 2014 and 2017, of which there've been quite a few. So one thing I've said I'd do in the scope of the James Cook project is to write an updated review of Zealandia for geoscientists. I mean, geoscientists, geologists, geophysicists. They're the ones that need to know this information first and foremost. The last review I wrote was back in 2004, and I've been told to my face that it's showing its age, and it's very true. All the diagrams are in black and white, and in 2004 we were barely referring to Zealandia at all. It was not front and center of our understanding, in contrast to what it is now. But also another strand of the James Cook Fellowship is a bit more innovative, and I've really only got plans for it at this stage. We'll have to see how it takes shape as time goes on. but I'm very keen to tell a Mataranga Maori story of Aotearoa, New Zealand, Zealandia exploration and discovery, as well as the scientific one. So I'll be seeking partners, co-authors to write a hopefully not a non-specialist book on this topic.
What is the significance of having got this far, and how much further you might get in understanding, describing this continent? Because we deal with the consequences of our geology on land in Aotearoa, New Zealand, very frequently. And will this provide more about hazards? Will this, over time, with more research, provide more information about our biota, for example, and our potential undersea resources? What are the implications of getting as far as you've got?
I think the two keywords here are context and accuracy. Certainly for geoscientists, if you say there's a continent there, instantly that conveys an impression of the nature of the crust, the thickness of the crust, how it responds to deformation, that sort of thing. Evolutionary biologists are very interested in Zealandia for context. It provides a lovely template on which they can explore these hypotheses of how the New Zealand flora and fauna were developed, whether it's by vicariance in terms of that they have Gondwana relicts, or if there have been repeated colonization of flora and fauna with time. So yeah, the scientific importance is there. I've already explained a bit about the political implications with the boundaries. The United Nations has accepted the submissions of New Zealand and Australia, so these boundaries I described are all set. In the social sciences and cultural arena, we're familiar with the identities of Oceania, Australasia. I mean, perhaps Zealandia gives us yet another way to look at ourselves. Just like any of the other world's continents, which is comprised of a number of countries and territories, Zealandia takes in Australia and New Caledonia as well. So perhaps there's some new identities to be got there. But you're right what you said earlier about providing a new impetus or an understanding of how we look at hazards, climate and resources.
Scientific disciplines, you've mentioned several, and how significant is this award for yours, for geology?
Yeah, it's great, really. Geology isn't always recognised as a leading science among the physics, chemistry, biology, mathematics, and the like. And it's also a reminder that Crown Research Institutes like GNS Science, NIWA, Landcare Research, we do fundamental, long-term, important research for New Zealand. I mean, geology is a great career choice. I've never had any regrets about the course I've taken. It's not something a lot of people are presented with when they're at school. I mean, it's not really in the mix among the better-known physics, chemistry, biology. But when you do get to uni and you see geology, it's certainly a geological career is a chance to do something practical and positive for society in terms of hazards, climate and resources that the planet needs. The solid earth is a part of our natural environments. It's as much a part of nature as our plants and animals and forests and the like.
That is an interesting observation, that perhaps it gets a little underrated compared to the, the physically glamorous flora and fauna. And I'm really curious as to your own early interest in geology. There are people who just always love rocks and picking up rocks and identifying them and understanding what they are. But what was it that really brought you to this particular scientific discipline that, as you say, you've never regretted?
Well, again, just as I can clearly remember that day on the Zonner when we dredged the granite, I can still clearly remember a day when I was 8 years old As you can probably guess from my accent, I grew up in England with my family there. And I was out on a Sunday afternoon picnic with my parents and brother and sister. And my father used to do a lot of sketching in on ink on paper. So we'd often go to these either stately homes or ruined castles. Anyway, we were off in the Northamptonshire countryside at an old shell of a building, Live de Newbeald, it was called. And as we were walking towards us along the track, my father bent down, and there's this freshly turned over ditch there. And he pulled an ammonite fossil out of the ditch and gave it to me. That's one of those spiral shaped shell fossils. And this one was Jurassic in age. It's an old fossil. So that was my first, well, it was a fossil, the first of in my rock and mineral collection, which was a childhood and a teenage hobby. So that was really where it all started. And I realized I could do study geology at university in London. And as I was doing that, I realized, yes, the research side of it is for me. And so I carried on from that and eventually ended up in New Zealand. And no regrets, great career choice.
I love the idea of the rock and mineral collection, and I wonder if you do see the world differently. Often, if we are out exploring, we see the sort of standout things around us, the attention seekers. And what do you see? What is the beauty that you see, and we could all see if we just knew a little bit more or looked a little bit more closely?
When I look at a landscape, I certainly appreciate it for what it is with the light and the color and the shapes. But I guess, yeah, being a geologist gives you some insight into why it's there. Oh yes, that's a limestone feature, or yes, we've got a granite there, or yeah, that's typical Greybacke ranges or whatever. I mean, the good thing is that geology is everywhere, right? If you go to a beach or a river, in fact, the beaches, the sea, and the rivers are bringing rocks to you. There's a whole variety of things you can pick up and look at and get inspired by. At GNS Science and locally here in Dunedin, in concert with Otago University geologists, we frequently do sort of community fair type of outreach where we have a table set up. And we do a kind of a Dr. Rock kind of surgery where we invite people to bring their rock samples to us. And yeah, it's really great to see children bringing their favorite rocks or things they've collected and held on to. So even if they don't go on to become geologists, hopefully they'll get the science bug and go on to a useful career.
We're busy looking to the sky to learn more and more about our distant past that we can still visibly see. But there's a lot about our slightly more recent past that we could see if we just had the eyes and the knowledge to. Who's played the most important role in your career, Nick, to get to the point where you were pursuing research that was at the front lines of something, trying to establish and build the data sets and build the evidence for the confirmation, really, of a whole continent. Who's been the really important influence?
Oh, there's too many people, really. Going forward in time, I guess my chemistry teacher at secondary school was a big influence. My PhD supervisor at Stanford University, he was a great mentor. And Bob Coleman died just the other year at age 97, a grand old geologist. I'll be very lucky to have most of my career at GNS Science. I don't think we'd have made the discoveries we have without the teams we can assemble and without the opportunities. So yeah, my numerous GNS colleagues down the years have helped us get to where we are and the picture we've got. Plus, New Zealand in general. New Zealand science, certainly geoscience, is very collegiate. We're a good bunch. We enjoy getting together every year for our annual conference, and we get on very well, and so there's a lot of mutual benefit there.
That is Dr. Nick Mortimer, geologist with GNS Science, who's recently been awarded the $100,000 James Cook Research Fellowship from the Royal Society Te Aparangi. to continue his work on Zealandia's geological makeup and ancestry.